Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, our top local news stories include a lawsuit filed over a toxic waste dump next to an elementary school in East County. Also hear about a bomb scare at a local high school this week. On our Green Scene Report, learn about a controversial proposal for sand mining in scenic El Monte Valley that's coming before the Lakeside Planning Group next week. On our Capitol Report, hear about two cases before the U.S. Supreme Court and how they could impact redistricting of congressional districts here in California. We'll also have the tales about an IRS hack that's led to the theft of tax returns from taxpayers whose identities were already stolen. We'll have details on a court ruling that upheld the blocking of President Obama's executive orders on immigration reforms. And then we have a real treat for you today. Our newsmaker interview is with Roy Toft, a Ramona resident and internationally acclaimed wildlife photographer whose works have appeared in National Geographic and Zoo News, and he's now leading tours to exotic places to teach wildlife photography skills to others. On the second half of our show, we'll have good news for Aztec sports fans. We'll also have a troubling story on the drugging of children in foster care and steps being taken to seek alternatives that would protect their health. The tragic fate of a man who went missing with his wife after leaving a local casino points up the importance of safety when driving in our backcountry, so we'll have some tips for you on today's show. On Destination East County, hear about the most fun festivals and events coming up this week and next in East County, from a Flag Day parade to the Taste of La Mesa and a fiddle-picking contest in Julian, with much, much more. Ford has issued a recall on vehicles to correct the dangerous condition, and we'll have details. And then from Public News Service, in the wake of the Santa Barbara oil spill, learn about a lawsuit filed by environmentalists seeking to stop a new deep-sea mining project proposed. Before you hit the surf this weekend, listen up for news about sharks spotted off the coast in San Diego County. And finally, we'll have some tips for you on wildfire safety as fire season is fast approaching. We'll have these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Parents have filed a lawsuit in El Cajon against Amatec Aerospace and Defense, alleging that the company dumped toxic waste into the ground for over 20 years, from 1963 until the 1980s. The site is located next door to Magnolia Elementary School on Greenfield Drive, north of Broadway, where some children have been suffering mysterious health problems, including breathing issues. Attorney John Fisk told 10 News that the company dumped up to 7,000 gallons of chlorinated solvent waste, creating the largest underground plume of tetrachloroethylene, or TCE, in California. The dumping stopped in the 80s, but a plume more than a mile long still exists, going all the way to Gillespie Field. Parents want the company to foot the bill for monitoring the health of their children who were exposed. Local health officials claim there's no evidence that the plant poses a serious, imminent hazard. But 10 News reports the same agency has found cancer levels higher than acceptable at the school. Thousands of students, teachers, and employees who attended or worked at Magnolia Elementary School for over four decades in El Cajon could potentially be impacted. Amatec has been fined for its failure to clean up the underground toxic waste dump, but the contamination remains, a ticking time bomb for children and adults who continue to be exposed. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
West Hills High School in Santee was placed on lockdown Tuesday after staff received a call at 9:15 a.m. claiming that several bombs had been placed around the campus. Sheriff's deputies swiftly responded and found suspicious items, prompting a call to the bomb arson unit and a lockdown order for the campus. Additional agencies were summoned, including the Santee Fire Department, San Diego Fire Bomb Squad, Federal Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Agents, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, CAL FIRE, El Cajon Police, and numerous sheriff's detectives. However, after a thorough search of the school, the suspicious items were determined not to be explosive. The lockdown was lifted and the school resumed normal operations, said Sergeant Kevin Ralph with the Sheriff's Department. If you have information on this case, you can call the sheriff's non-emergency line at 858-565-5200, or you can remain anonymous and eligible for up to a $1,000 reward leading to an arrest by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-4877. This has been Leon Thompson for East County Magazine.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community. A controversial proposal for sand mining in scenic El Monte Valley along the San Diego Riverbed is on the agenda for Lakeside's planning group on Wednesday, June 3rd at 6:30 p.m. in the Lakeside Community Center. The applicant is the El Monte Nature Preserve, LLC, though residents voice concerns that the project will be destructive to nature, not preserve it. Lakeside resident Billy Ortiz, a videographer who chronicles Lakeside's beauty for media outlets locally as well as the Lakeside Historical Society, opposes the project. He voiced outrage over the plan. "If we don't stop them, our beautiful valley will be destroyed," he told us. "We will be there to protest and discourage the project." A Facebook page dedicated to halting the project has been set up. You can find that by Googling El Monte Nature Preserve Facebook. According to the site, the project is masquerading as a nature project but would lower the valley's level by 30 feet and take 30 years to complete. The El Monte Valley is home to a wide range of threatened and endangered species, including golden eagles, horned lizards, leaf-spells, vireos, and gnatcatchers, as well as other wildlife such as deer, bobcat, loggerhead shrike, red-headed woodpeckers, and nuthatches. Residents also voiced fears over pollution of their drinking water in an area that's dependent on well water. Concerns have also been raised over potential spread of valley fever, which has been found in the valley, as well as impacts on the Van Omering Dairy. Sand mining has been proposed to the site in the past on land owned by Helix Water District and has been the subject of past litigation involving the district. Last August, Helix settled with El Monte Canyon LLC and its successor, the El Capitan Golf Club LLC, as we reported. The settlement ended a six-year dispute over plans by Helix for a water recharge project and wildlife habitat in Lakeside's El Monte Valley. The deal allowed for sale of the property, but also some sand mining at the site, as well as habitat restoration. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Ed Barreno with a Capitol Report. The U.S. Supreme Court is set to hear two cases on redistricting of congressional districts. In the first case, there is a challenge to the current system of drawing congressional districts. Currently, an independent commission is used to draw out congressional districts. California voters approved using the Independent Commission to end decades of gerrymandering districts by state legislators in the past. Now this case challenges the constitutionality of the Independent Commission drawing these congressional districts. This case does not apply to state legislative districts, only elections for the U.S. House of Representatives. The second case will determine whether drawing boundaries for voting districts, which must be equal in size, should be based on total population or the number of eligible voters. If the court rules that the districts must be based on eligible voters, that could shift power away from communities with large immigrant populations, where many are either undocumented or not yet citizens with the right to vote. Here in San Diego, that could mean less influence for groups such as Latinos and Iraqi Chaldean immigrants. It could also shift some power out of urban population centers, giving more power to rural districts, also tending to favor Republicans over Democrats, analysts have indicated. One thing's for certain, both cases could have broad impacts on California voting.
Organized crime rings are being blamed for the theft of over 100,000 tax returns and theft of tax refunds. To access the information through a security breach in the Internal Revenue Service system, the criminals used stolen personal data, meaning their targets had already been victims of identity theft elsewhere, then impersonated taxpayers to steal the money. The IRS has shut down the Get Transcript application used in the heist by crooks who set up phony tax returns, then filed for refunds. According to the New York Times, the IRS said it paid out nearly $50 million in refunds before getting wise to the scheme. IRS Commissioner John Costinan said the thieves are organized crime syndicates that have plundered others across the financial industry. The hack likely organized in Russia, CNN reports. Security questions for verifying taxpayers also proved unreliable, since answers to such authentication questions are available for sale on the black market online. The IRS reports that its main computer system, which handles most tax filings, has not been breached. The agency has sent letters notifying taxpayers whose accounts were compromised and is offering them free credit monitoring services. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
The California Assembly has passed Assembly Bill 775, which would require crisis pregnancy centers to disclose if they have no licensed medical provider on staff and provide women with a list of options, including public programs that offer free or low-cost prenatal care for those wishing to carry pregnancies to term and abortions for those who don't. The bill comes in response to a year-long undercover investigation of the centers by the National Abortion Rights League, which claims the centers are mostly set up by anti-choice groups and that women are given misleading information. But opponents call the measure a bully bill that they contend threatens the existence of abortion alternative clinics and violates constitutionally protected religious freedoms. The website Stop AB 775 states, "This bill forces abortion alternative organizations to refer women to a government program that provides state funding for abortions." The site further argues that the bill undermines the patient and medical provider relationship as well as religious freedoms, since many such pro-life programs are faith-based. Opponents include the California Catholic Conference. But pro-choice supporters say the measure is needed to protect women from misleading information and lack of medical professionalism. The undercover investigation found that one so-called medical advisor at a clinic misidentified an IUD, or intrauterine birth control device, as a baby. The NARAL investigation found that 91% of the crisis pregnancy centers told women that abortion is linked to breast cancer, infertility, miscarriage, or suicide, findings that NARAL calls blatant lies that have been disproved and rejected by the medical community. So we looked into this. Just what are the findings of reputable peer-reviewed medical journals and major medical professional associations on these issues? While a full-term pregnancy can actually reduce the risk of breast cancer, there is no credible evidence that abortion or miscarriage increases the risk of a woman getting breast cancer, according to numerous large-scale peer-reviewed studies. In 2003, the U.S. National Cancer Institute held a workshop of over 100 of the world's leading experts who study pregnancy and breast cancer risk. The experts reviewed human and animal studies that looked at the link between pregnancy and breast cancer risk, including studies of both abortions and miscarriages. It found no risk of increased breast cancer from either abortion or miscarriage. The level of scientific evidence for these findings was considered to be well established. At the highest level, the American Cancer Society concluded, "The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists Committee on Gynecologic Practice also reviewed available evidence in 2003 and again in 2009. In 2009, the committee concluded that early studies claiming a link between abortion and breast cancer were flawed and that more recent studies found no link. As for impacts of abortion on fertility, the Mayo Clinic website states that abortion generally does not cause fertility problems, although some research does suggest a possible link between abortion and vaginal bleeding in early pregnancy, placenta problems, premature birth, and low birth weight. Rarely, a surgical abortion can damage the cervix, but this is much more likely to occur in women who have had multiple surgical abortions. As for whether abortion increases the risk of suicide, however, the American Psychological Association reported in 1990 that severe negative reactions after abortion are rare and are in line with those following other normal life stresses. The APA updated its findings in August 2008 to account for new evidence and again concluded that multiple high-quality studies found termination of a first unplanned pregnancy did not increase the risk of mental health problems. And in December 2011, the United Kingdom's National Collaborating Center for Mental Health similarly concluded that abortion did not increase the risk of mental health problems. Assembly Bill 775 would authorize the State Attorney General, as well as city attorneys and county council, to bring an action to impose civil penalties against facilities that fail to comply with the law's requirements if it's enacted. A clause that would have required the Attorney General to post on the Department of Justice website a list of facilities on which civil penalties have been imposed was amended, however, out of the bill earlier this month. The bill is co-authored by Assemblywoman Autumn Burke and Assemblyman David Chu. It passed the Assembly 46-25 and will now advance to the Senate. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals has upheld an injunction issued by a federal court in Texas which blocks President Barack Obama's executive actions on immigration. The president's order granted protection from immigration and work permits to millions of undocumented immigrants. Texas and 25 other states had sued to stop the president's actions from taking effect this month as scheduled. The appellate court also denied a request by the Obama administration to limit its injunction only to the 26 states that filed the lawsuit. Another 14 states filed motions in support of the Obama actions, stating they would increase tax revenues and bring economic growth. The plaintiffs contended that the president lacked authority to make such broad changes to immigration policy without the consent of Congress, which has repeatedly blocked efforts at immigration reforms. Opponents of the reforms have called the executive action an abuse of power. However, the White House has contended that executive action was needed to fix a broken immigration system. The ruling was made by 2 of 3 judges on the appeals court. The Obama administration's Justice Department may appeal the ruling to the full appeals court or ask the Supreme Court to weigh in with a final decision. The New York Times reports that the National Immigration Law Center executive director, Maria Elena Incapié, voiced concerns that the lawsuit and now the delay will confuse and instill fear among immigrants, making it harder to carry out the order even if it is ultimately upheld. "Our communities suffer every single day," she said. The Fifth Circuit Court will hear oral arguments on the appeal starting in July. Legal experts have indicated that the court found the request for an emergency stay of the injunction would not cause irreparable harm, but that the full court could still reverse the Texas judge's ruling when it hears the merits of the case. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Welcome. This is Mimi Pollack, host of East County Magazine's Animal Tales. Welcome to Animal Tales. This is Mimi Pollack. I am here today with Ramona wildlife photographer Roy Tuft. Not only is he a renowned photographer with pictures appearing in National Geographic magazine, he also offers guided tours to Africa, Costa Rica, and Alaska. Tuft got his degree as a wildlife biologist, so the focus of these tours is showing you how to photograph indigenous wildlife while having adventures in the wild. Welcome, Roy.
Thanks for having me, Mimi. Happy to be here.
How did you get into wildlife photography?
Well, I was the crazy kid in Poway with the garage full of snakes, right? So right away, everybody knew I loved animals. And so I grew up loving animals, getting out in our local chaparral and watching the hawks and catching snakes and enjoying that. Went on to get a wildlife degree from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo in Northern California and got my first camera as I graduated from college and started taking pictures of what I loved.
What type of camera was it?
It was a Canon AE-1, which was kind of a classic old film camera.
And so the camera inspired you to start taking pictures and combining both the wildlife degree along with the photography?
Yeah, I mean, it's always the animals that were the major interest, and the photography is kind of a stimulus to get you out there, right? And it keeps you out there longer. So it's just kind of a natural thing to want to enjoy your subjects more. You can take images of them and enjoy them when you're back home.
And besides Costa Rica and Alaska, what countries have you been to in Africa, and what other countries have you been to in the world where you've done wildlife photography?
Wow, good question. I've been to, I should count the number of countries I've been to, but in the last 30 years of doing wildlife photography, I've been pretty much all over the world, from Antarctica to Japan and Indonesia and Australia, New Zealand, most of the countries in Africa and Central and South America. So yeah, I guess it'd be easier to say very few places I haven't been at this point.
And after college, how did you move into becoming more of a professional wildlife photographer?
Well, right after college, I started working at the Wild Animal Park here in San Diego. I guess now it's called the Zufari Park, which is always hard for me to remember. And I was doing the bird show there. And it's kind of I think anybody that's been in San Diego for a while knows that bird show. It's been there for 30 years. So I was happy that they asked me to join them there at the bird show. And being at the Wild Animal Park every day, doing my job at the bird show, of course, I'm surrounded by beautiful wildlife, even though it's not really wild, but it gave me an opportunity to get out during breaks and lunch hours with my camera and start taking imagery and work on it and get better at it. And so that really got me going into wildlife photography.
And how did you get connected to National Geographic magazine?
One of my last years working at the park, we had a National Geographic photographer come to the park doing a story on new zoos. And his name was Michael Nick Nichols, really a world-renowned photographer who's done dozens and dozens of stories for National Geographic. Well, everybody at the park knew I was into photography pretty heavily at that point, so they asked Nick if he needed an assistant, and I helped him on that new zoos project. So that kind of got me, you know, a little bit in working with National Geographic, and a couple years later, I went and did a two-year project with Nick on tigers that we spent 2 years photographing wild tigers, and that was kind of the start of my career and a wonderful, you know, mentorship for me to be working with such a well-known and terrific photographer as Nick.
Okay. Tell me more about those 2 years photographing tigers. For example, what exactly did you do while you were there? How did you help Nick? And do you have any memorable moment or story that you can tell us from those years?
Sure. Yeah. So we were working in India, which has the largest population of tigers. And a big part of the story, of course, is doing a natural history portion of the project. So we spent over 2 years photographing a female tiger raising cubs. And so we basically go out every day at 4:30 in the morning on elephant back, because that's the easiest and most accessible way to be close to tigers is to be on top of an animal that they're not really that nervous about. 7 days a week for 3 months per trip to India. So we did three of those for the natural history portion. And we were photographing tigers, and we'd spend about 10 hours a day in the field and only see tigers about every 5 days on average. So it was a lot of time in the field for very little, you know, return, but it was definitely worth it.
But didn't you also do some groundbreaking work with remote cameras?
Yes, Nick was just really pushing the limits with remote cameras in the field, and tigers being a difficult animal to photograph in person and at close range. He set up seven remote cameras in the jungle with my help. And my main job was to keep those remote cameras running 24/7. A remote camera, if you don't know, is a system where there's an infrared beam, and the animal basically breaks that beam and takes his own picture. And that allowed us to take wide-angle, very intimate shots of tigers that have never been done before. And that was one of our main ways of getting that kind of unique imagery of tigers while we were there.
That sounds very interesting. I imagine you must have gotten some incredible photographs with the remote cameras. Is there any one particular picture that you remember that comes to mind? Or
yeah, actually, and just for the listeners at home, if you have kind of that stack of National Geographic magazines on your library wall. It's 1997, December is the cover issue. And one of the pictures in there was a 50-page story, so it was a huge Nat Geo article. One of the pictures, I placed a camera on a vertical dry waterfall, so it's a rock wall. And we had seen a male tiger jump that chasm in where the water would be running if it was actually wet, and to get to another water source. And so we put this camera, set it up so he's jumping right into a 20-millimeter wide lens, which is a very unique perspective. And that camera was there for 3 months, and we had one picture from that 3 months, and it's in the issue, and it's amazing, you know, a male tiger jumping right into the camera midair. So it's one of those, you know, pictures you'd never get in person. You'd have to kind of use this system of remote cameras, and it's much more common nowadays, but when Nick did it, and we did it for the Tiger Project, it was really revolutionary.
I remember that issue. It was just amazing. Now tell me about a memorable moment.
Another memorable moment with tigers is, as I mentioned earlier, we spent a lot of time in elephants following tigers and photographing them, you know, straight and not with a remote camera. Well, at one time, Nick was on one elephant. I was on another elephant. And we have our mahouts, or our drivers, driving the elephants. And we had this one male tiger named Charger that was in this tall grass. And we backed our elephants into the grass to be able to photograph from a perspective down into the grass. And obviously went too close to the tiger as he was feeling pressured. He came up on the back of Nick's elephant, actually jumped onto the rear of the elephant.
Wow.
Which was exciting for everyone, especially the elephants. So the elephants just started spinning and screaming, and we, you know, Nick and I held on for dear life,
and they rotated fast.
Yes, they just spun, you know, just like tornadoes, and just sent the tiger flying, and it was quite an exciting moment. You know, like most things with wildlife photography, when instances like this happen, you know, it's usually because we do something wrong, and it was obviously our fault. We pushed the, you know, we asked the elephants to get too close to the tiger, and he just did what was natural for a tiger, which is, you know, get out of here. And of course, he did it in a very traumatic fashion.
That was probably scary and exciting at the same time.
Yeah, certainly.
And then after, when you finished with doing the tiger shoot, what was the next project you worked on?
Well, after the tiger project, I came home and rested for a while because that was a long project. I actually did an assignment for Audubon magazine where I went and photographed ocelots in Texas. And it's another cat, a smaller spotted cat. And a lot of people don't know we have ocelots in the United States.
I didn't know that. Ocelots in Texas. What part of Texas?
Yeah, this was in near Laguna Atascosa, so it's way south Texas. The majority of ocelots are found in Central and South America, so this is just kind of a small population coming up into Texas.
Are they endangered?
They are endangered. There's only about 50 ocelots left in Texas in the United States. And so, yeah, I was also using remote cameras again to photograph this elusive cat.
And then what was your next big shoot after that?
Wow. Next big shoot after that. I did another project for Audubon on rainforest photography and birds. So that was another cover story for Audubon magazine.
I remember you told me about wolves, that you did something up in Alaska with wolves.
Yeah. You know, right out of college, as I mentioned, I was a wildlife biology major. And right out of college, I did a wolf population study up in Alaska. For the summer, it was, you know, merely a 3-month project putting collars on wolves so we could do a population study. So that was my first time in the field with my new camera. So that was a kind of an exciting time for me.
And then also for, like, I believe it was 3 years, you and your wife opened up a gallery up in Solana Beach on Cedros Avenue, right?
Yeah, we had a beautiful gallery on Cedros in Solana Beach, and it was my wife's idea to kind of show my art to people and be able to have a gallery, and it was fun. We did that and met a lot of local people. It was when we first moved back to San Diego in the early 2000s. You know, we moved back in 2005.
Where did you live before then?
We were up in the Bay Area for about 8 years, up in Half Moon Bay on the coast south of San Francisco.
But you are a local San Diego boy, right? Where did you grow up?
Yeah, I actually grew up in Poway. So we moved to Poway in 1970. Yeah, I grew up here, went to high school here, went off to college in Northern California, and then we moved around a bit and then came back to kind of the motherland here in Ramona in 2005.
What do you like about living in Ramona?
We love the wilderness experience we have in Ramona. You know, we live on big acreage, which you can still find here in the East County, which is great. And so it's peaceful.
How many acres?
We have 40 acres.
Wow.
Yeah, and
nice.
It's in kind of the big boulder country up there near Mount Woodson, so it's beautiful. Lots of local wildlife. You know, I don't always have to jump on an airplane to get my camera out and photograph wildlife. In fact, this last week, I've spent every morning in a blind photographing our small indigenous fox, our California gray fox, something that actually I've spent no time photographing fox all my years here. They're kind of a tough animal to see. We often see coyotes a lot more, but this is a little bit smaller canid that is more nocturnal, quite a bit more elusive than coyotes. And they're just beautiful. They have a gray color with a cinnamon rust on the chest and their shoulders. Gorgeous, big, fluffy tail. And this week I was sitting in a blind photographing a den with 5 kits, and that's what they call young foxes. So what a great, you know, here I am in my backyard. I got my coffee and I walk across the valley, get in my blind and photograph beautiful foxes right here in San Diego County.
I know. I've seen the pictures. They're amazing. Now, you mentioned to me earlier that you have a teaching credential and you enjoy working with people. And so you mentioned to me that in the year 2000, you started organizing photographic expeditions where you would take people to different countries and teach them how to photograph wildlife. Tell us more about that.
Sure. Yeah, that's a big part of my business now is leading photographic tours or safaris. And, you know, it's never a better time than now to take photos. You know, the digital era and digital cameras have made it so much more accessible for people. You know, you're not spending a ton of money on film. You know, you're getting instant feedback from these little TV screens. So you can really progress much quicker than the old days with film. And so, you know, people are finding they want to go out instead of going on a typical vacation and going to some beach and sitting on the beach or going golfing, that there's this whole other avenue for vacations. And, you know, you can combine wildlife viewing, traveling, and learning, you know, something new and exciting. And that's what I do in these wildlife tours. You know, I bring people to Africa or Brazil or Alaska for bears or Mexico, and Costa Rica is one of my all-time favorite destinations. It's close and you have a rainforest right there. So it's a wonderful way to get people out in the field and, you know, try out a new camera, or if they're already an experienced photographer, it's wonderful to go with a pro that already gives you, taking you to the best spots and the best lodges. And so that's a big part of my business. In fact, this year I'll be in the field 160 days running my photo tours.
For those of you who just tuned in, this is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, East County Magazine. Now, I want to go into more detail about these trips. For example, what countries do you go to in Africa?
My main country I go to in Africa is Botswana, a lovely country. It's just north of South Africa, so it's in the southern part of the continent. And I've been going there. This will be my 14th year leading tours to Botswana, so obviously I love it. It's spectacular wildlife. Most people perhaps have heard of the Okavango Delta, which is a very well-known area. It's a floodplain and a desert that creates this oasis for wildlife. And so that's my main destination. Although I have to say next week, I'm going to Tanzania in East Africa, leading a photo trip there. So a couple different countries in Africa I go to.
Getting back to Botswana, do some people go there because of the books, the number one ladies detective agency? Do they ever go there and ask you about that? Or?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. I mean, people who go to Botswana, of course, have read those books because it's such an interesting series. And it's based in Botswana. I don't think it's the reason they go, obviously, because it's really the wildlife that brings them there. But it's a nice connection.
Yeah. And when people go to Africa, they must think that, you know, they're going to be roughing it. Or why don't you tell us, because I remember you mentioned to me that you want people to know that going to Africa is not going to be roughing it, that it's actually going to be a very pleasant experience in terms of lodging and food and how they take care of you. Why don't you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I get that a lot, Mimi. I get, you know, isn't it dangerous and aren't you afraid going to Africa? And I think so much of the media reports of, you know, they generalize when they're speaking of the entire continent of Africa, when there's, you know, there's epidemics of something going on or a little bit of violence somewhere. It's a huge continent. And, you know, we're going to a place that's very safe. In fact, the most dangerous part of your African safari will be driving to the airport here in Limburg Field. I mean, being in your car statistically is more dangerous than any other part of the trip. And we're taken care of. It's just really amazing the service level that we get on in our trips to Africa, the lodging, the food, the wine. Yeah, everything is 5-star. So there's absolutely no roughing it. You know, I have clients that are kind of wonder what big hiking boots they should buy to bring on my trip. And I have to tell them that, you know, I wear Crocs, the most comfortable light slip-on shoe, because we're in vehicles all day. We're not going on death marches. We're not hiking. We're driving around in wonderful vehicles and viewing this wildlife very close and photographing it and then going back for wonderful dinners and wonderful lodging. So it's, you know, it's nothing that you have to worry about roughing it. It's very much a luxury vacation.
I've also heard that the African people themselves are very friendly and very welcoming.
They really are. They are just over the top friendly, just smiles from ear to ear at all times. And so it's a wonderful cultural experience. People that just don't get to travel that much, if it's based on fear, get out there and see some other places around the world, because people are people. And when you go to these communities, they're just so welcoming. And, you know, it's such a joy to see people from around the world and get a different perspective. If you're just always in one location, it's tough to view the world in more than one perspective. So yeah, get out there and travel and see the world and see some beautiful places. That's what I like to do.
Now, what about for the more outdoorsy types, the ones that want to go hiking, the ones that want to have more of an outdoor adventure, what country would you recommend that they take a photographic tour with you, but to where? Like, for somebody who's more of an outdoorsy hiking.
Yeah, if you don't want to be in a vehicle the entire time and you want to get out and physically, you know, hike and enjoy the environment, I actually have several that do that. Costa Rica is a great one. It's close. It's an easy flight. Within 6 hours, you're in prime rainforest and seeing, you know, four species of monkeys and tropical birds, toucans and parrots. It's really mind-boggling, you know, in this day and age. You can just get away for 6-8 hours and you're in this amazing tropical environment. So that's one we definitely get out and hike and experience that rainforest. As I mentioned earlier, I was just in Chile photographing pumas, our mountain lion, same cat. And it's possible there to photograph them on foot. And so we do a lot of hiking in Torres de Peña National Park in Chile. So that's definitely high up. People really want to get their heart rate up and do some hiking along with photography and wildlife viewing. Then that's a great destination.
And now what about Alaska? Tell us about your tours to Alaska.
Well, Alaska is another location that's close and easy to get to. And, you know, we have our own Serengeti right here in the United States, and that is Alaska. So there's nothing like the open spaces up there. I've been leading bear trips up there for over 10 years. And so this is a brown bear excursion where we're out, you know, on foot, hiking and photographing the feeding brown bears. They're feeding on salmon in August on the different rivers in Alaska. So it's another thrilling, large carnivore photography adventure. But once again, we're staying on a boat and it's amazing food and, you know, catching our own halibut and king crab and not much roughing it there either. I guess I'm getting older, maybe, so I don't want to rough it either. So I like to go to destinations that we can, you know, have a nice place to stay and good food and enjoy each other's company and still get out and see wildlife.
Well, you're definitely a people person, so I can see how you would have fun leading these tours. For those of you who just tuned in, this is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, East County Magazine, and this is Mimi Pollack, and I'm talking to wildlife photographer Roy Tuft. Now, what would you say for when you take your people on these tours to Africa, Costa Rica, Alaska, Chile? Tell me two tips to be able to do successful wildlife photography.
Two tips. I think the first thing is patience. When we go out with wildlife, it's not like going to a studio or going to the zoo or where things are just going to perform for you. So I really, you know, I have to set expectations for my clients that we're going to extremely rich areas for wildlife, but there's still an element of being patient. The animals aren't there to please you or entertain you. We're just going in their environment. And obviously I'm taking people to very productive areas where we're going to see some great stuff. But, you know, just be happy to be there. And, you know, and that's my job is to get you in the right spot at the right time and to have wonderful wilderness experiences.
Nice. Is there a website people can go to find out more information?
Sure. My website is toftphoto.com. So my last name, T-O-F as in Frank, T-Photo, P-H-O-T-O.com. And, you know, you can get on there. I have lots of different links to photography and wildlife. I actually have a tours and workshops page, so you want to get on there to see where I'm going and what I'm doing, and feel free to shoot me an email.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And if you would like more information about Roy, look for my article that's coming up in East County Magazine. This is Mimi Pollack of Animal Tales. Thank you very much.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, East County Magazine.
This is Leon Thompson with a sports report on East County Magazine. For the third year in a row, San Diego State University's men's baseball team has won the Mountain West Tournament Championship. The Aztecs scored two runs in the bottom of the sixth inning to come from behind, adding another later in the game for a 6-4 victory over New Mexico's Lobos. The big win gives the Aztecs a spot on the NCAA regionals. Now the team's on a quest to reach the College World Series in Omaha. The first step is to defeat the UC Santa Barbara Gauchos in a regional series where they will square off on Friday night.
May is National Foster Care Month. And now the Children's Defense Fund is voicing concerns over the high number of children in foster care who are being given mind-altering drugs, in many cases to control behavior, not to address real medical problems. Nearly half of all children living in residential treatment centers or group homes take psychotropic medications, as well as nearly 1 in 4 children in foster care. Kids in foster care are also more apt to be prescribed multiple psychotropic medications at very high doses, even though research shows that this can result in serious side effects and harm to a child's developing brain and central nervous system, says Marion Wright Edelman, president of the Children's Defense Fund, in her Child Watch column. Such drugs can even cause nightmares, suicidal thoughts, and death. Are all those drugs really necessary? Anecdotal evidence shows that some children can do just fine without them. Take the case of Keonti Cook, a 10-year-old profiled on ABC's 2020 television show. He stopped taking medications for bipolar disorder, ADHD, and seizures, and was reportedly transformed. Last year, the Wall Street Journal published an article on foster kids who were speaking out after getting off these powerful drugs. People like Chris Nobles, who now lives on his own, takes no psychiatric medications, and now has a full-time job training foster care workers. The highest number of such drugs given to foster care kids, 27% of them, are prescribed for ADHD, or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, while 18% are given to control negative behavior, the Wall Street Journal reports. Instead of relying on drugs touted by the lucrative pharmaceutical industry, a better option is to address the traumas that children in foster care have also endured, Edelman suggests. President Obama's budget includes funding for a demonstration to promote interventions that address the overuse of these powerful medications for children in foster care. The Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children, Youth, and Families is asking Congress for $250 million over 5 years to set up a program to make this happen, plus an additional $500 million in incentives to states that reduce the overuse of psychotropic drugs and increase access to healthier alternatives, practices that are already in place in some states. Edelman concludes that the time is now to take action to protect kids in foster care. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
A Fullerton couple missing for 2 weeks after leaving Valley View Casino has been found. An off-road vehicle rider spotted their vehicle on the Los Coyotes reservation in a remote area near Warner Springs. That's far off the route searched by authorities since the couple was believed traveling north to a Mother's Day celebration at a family member's home in La Quinta. The body of 79-year-old Cecil Paul Knudsen was found in the vehicle. His wife, 68-year-old Diane Bedwell, was found severely dehydrated and taken to an area hospital. She is expected to survive. Bedwell told authorities the couple tried to take a shortcut on a back road but became lost. Their vehicle broke down, and there was no cell phone reception. The couple set out containers to capture rainwater and ate pie and oranges in their vehicle. An autopsy of Knudsen is being conducted by the medical examiner. However, foul play is not suspected, according to the sheriff. The tragedy serves as a lesson to all traveling in the backcountry. It's wise to advise someone else of your intended route and any changes to the itinerary. Always carry water and an emergency supply of non-perishable food, as well as enough medications to last for a week or more. Be sure cell phones are charged and have a cell phone charger for your car. Carry a device for signaling rescue planes or helicopters, such as a flashlight or mirror. Avoid signal flares, however. Remember, it was a lost hunter's flare that started the devastating cedar fire. Also carry blankets and jackets in case you have to spend a night or several in your vehicle. This is Leon Thompson for East County Magazine.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County.
each week. This week's Destination East County includes a classical guitar concert, a Living Legends art and photo exhibit, a Flag Day parade, a fiddle picking contest, women's health fair, and more.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including The Taste of La Mesa, Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, and the Julian Dance and Backcountry Barbecue.
So stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more.
Guitar maestro Robert Witzel will perform a special concert at the Cuyamaca College Theater on Friday, May 29th at 8 p.m. Witzel, a Grossmont College music instructor, studied guitar with the legendary Romero family, playing lute and guitar in a foursome with Celine, Pepe, and Angel Romero at the Napa Music Festival in 1977. He teaches classical guitar at Grossmont College and performs alongside fellow Grossmont College faculty member Fred Benetti as the award-winning Odium Guitar Duo, showcasing innovative music that can be performed on two classical guitars. For details and tickets, visit cuyamaca.edu.
San Diego Legends is an annual recognition of San Diego elders who lead by example. The Legends exhibit is comprised of paintings by famed local artist Mona Mills and photography by San Diego County Library Director Jose Aponte. This year's Legends are former County Director of Social Services Cecil Stepp, Renaissance Man John Howard, UCSD Ethnology Professor Robert Alvarez, author Jacqueline Gamache, and Filipino press writer, activist Aurora Goodall. The exhibit debut and reception will be held Friday, May 29th at 6 p.m. at the Lemon Grove branch of the San Diego County Library. The reception will include meet and greet with the Legends, music by Richard Favell, a dance performance by the county's Filipino American Employees Association, and refreshments.
The Southern Indian Health Council on Willows Road in Alpine is hosting a Women's Wellness Health Fair this Friday, May 29th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. You're invited to come for a day of wellness, workshops, resources, and vendor tables, health screenings, giveaways, goodies, food, and drawings. Arrive early for the 1 mile walk for wellness. Registration is at 9 a.m. for the walk and begins at 9:30. The Southern Indian Health Council is just off Interstate 8 at 4058 Willows Road. For more information, call 445-1188 or go to sihc.org.
The American flag will be flown proudly at the 18th Annual La Mesa Flag Day Parade on Saturday, May 30th. The parade will begin at 10 a.m. led by the United States 3rd Marine Aircraft Wing Band through the downtown La Mesa Village. The parade also includes floats, war heroes, equestrian units, service clubs, youth groups, and bands. There are also two pre-parade concerts at 9 a.m. for those arriving early along the parade route. The Grand Marshal is Sharp Grossmont Hospital, celebrating its 60th year.
In Julian, the California State Old Time Fiddlers Association District 7 presents the Julian Fiddle and Picking Contest on Saturday, May 30th at Julian's Town Hall in the historic gold mining town of Julian. Building on the decades-long history of the former Julian Banjo and Fiddle Contest, the Julian Fiddle and Picking Contest provides fiddlers, guitarists, mandolin players, and banjo players an opportunity to demonstrate their talents in a festive and friendly atmosphere. For details, visit sandiegofiddler.org.
The Crimson River Quartet will perform a free concert featuring a rich blend of harmony on Saturday, May 30th at 6 p.m. The concert will be held at the Lakeside Christian Church in Lakeside as the church celebrates 60 years at the site.
The art exhibit, Wild Graces, features photography from two award-winning photographers, Jody Holden and Robert Treat. This exhibit will be on display in the Mission Trails Regional Park Visitor Center Art Gallery from May 23rd through June 19th. The public is cordially invited to a reception in honor of the artist on Sunday, May 31st from 1 until 4 p.m. in the Visitor's Center. For details, you can visit mtrp.org.
Upstart Theater Company presents its inaugural production, William Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, hosted by the Valhalla Theater Arts Department on June 4th and 5th at 7 p.m. in the Valhalla High School Theater in El Cajon. Upstart, founded in 2015, is comprised of and run entirely by students from schools throughout the Grossmont Union High School District, dedicated to keeping classical works of theater alive on the modern educational stage. This is the first time ever that a fully student-run play has been produced at Valhalla, and the first time students from multiple schools have collaborated to perform a play. This rollicking comedy takes us on a historical romp through 1930s Illyria, featuring mistaken identity and found love. For tickets, visit ValhallaTheater.com. Now, for a preview of coming attractions.
Attention bargain hunters! The rural community of Guate will hold its third annual community yard sale on Saturday, June 6th, starting at 7 a.m. The sale will be held at 26835 Old Highway 80 in Guate, located 1 mile west of Hilltop Supply.
The La Mesa Chamber of Commerce invites you to eat your heart out at the 7th Annual Taste of La Mesa, featuring tastings from 29 local restaurants. This year's delicious event will be held on Monday, June 8th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the La Mesa Community Center. Discount tickets are available before June 4th. For tickets and details, visit lamesachamber.com.
Julian's Sons of the American Legion invites you to the annual Julian Dance and Backcountry Barbecue on Saturday, June 13th from 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. The event will be held at Mangini Winery and will feature three live bands, Shotgun Wedding, Freight Shakers, and Bastard Sons of Johnny Cash. Food, beer, and wine and soft drinks will be on sale separately. For tickets, visit juliandance.org. That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendar in our festival and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Ford Motor Company has announced two recalls of its vehicles. The first is a recall of nearly 20,000 new Ford Mustangs to replace a heat shield around gas tanks with a 2.3-liter engine. The second recall is to fix faulty power steering that has caused four accidents in Ford sedans, though thus far no one has been injured. An electrical problem could cause loss of power steering, the automaker warns. Power steering recall includes Ford Taurus and Flex crossovers manufactured in 2011 to 2013, as well as Lincoln MKS and MKT. Also included are the 2011 and 2012 Ford Fusion, the Lincoln MKZ, and some 2011 Mercury Milan cars. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
A San Francisco-based environmental law firm is suing the federal government to stop a deep-sea mining project in the waters between Hawaii and Mexico. The Center for Biological Diversity is challenging the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's decision to issue permits to a subsidiary of Lockheed Martin. Plaintiff's attorney Emily Jeffers says the permits would allow the company to explore the deep seabed before completing the environmental impact studies that are required by federal law.
It's a pristine environment, and until the mining companies and the government can show that they can mine without causing significant environmental impacts, we shouldn't be giving mining companies carte blanche to go ahead and despoil the ecosystem.
There are no deep-sea mining operations anywhere in the world yet, but more than a dozen have been permitted for exploration by the International Seabed Authority. Rare earth minerals like zinc, copper, nickel, cobalt, and manganese are used in consumer electronics, and this is driving the push toward deep-sea mining. Lockheed says the venture is strategically important for Western countries because China has a near monopoly on the valuable minerals. Jeffers says the giant cutting machines used in deep-sea mining could smother bottom dwellers, interrupt communication between sea turtles, and damage habitat for whales and sharks. She wants the U.S. to put environmental concerns first.
And it's very important that we do these environmental analyses before we issue the permits, because once mining companies are allowed to make investments in deep sea mining, it's much harder to build in environmental safeguards post hoc.
The court is expected to issue a ruling in about a year. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is Leon Thompson with a Shark Watch warning on East County Magazine. More than a dozen young great white sharks have been spotted recently off the Southern California coast, mostly off Huntington Beach. But this week, a 6-foot shark that lifeguards indicate could be a great white was seen off the shore in Oceanside. Unlike in the Jaws movie, where the sight of a shark fin sent beachcombers screaming to the shore, the Oceanside shark sighting didn't seem to faze hundreds of surfers and swimmers from venturing into the water, KNSD reports. The sharks are likely seeking fish and other food sources in deep waters, experts have said, and thus far have shown no interest in people closer to the shore.
This is Ed Barrena for East County Magazine on KNSJ. With the threat of wildfires across multiple states, the nonprofit Federal Alliance for Safe Homes, or FLASH, offers wildfire prevention tips for residents. You can protect your home and prepare your family for wildfires. Remember, embers can be blown more than a mile from the flame, so it is critical to take action to make your home wildfire resilient. Here are some ways to prepare your family. Have a fire disaster plan, including at least 2 predetermined evacuation routes, a NOAA weather radio, and disaster kit for your family. Follow any and all evacuation orders immediately. Here are some other ways you can protect your home. Identify an emergency water supply within 1,000 feet of your home through one of the following: community water hydrant system, drafting site on a lake, cooperative emergency storage tank with neighbors, or a swimming pool. Remove fuels that can lead flames to your home or that can become ignited from windblown embers, including dead grass, leaves, and branches within 30 feet of buildings. Dry leaves and litter from roofs, rain gutters, decks, and walkways, dead and dry litter at the base of plants, tree branches within 6 to 10 feet off the ground, firewood within 30 feet of buildings, and continuous beds of combustible vegetation on the ground or in treetops that can bring large flames within 100 feet of your home. Clean your gutters, eaves, and roof to make sure they are clear of debris. Plant species that retain moisture and resist ignition, including native fire-resistant vegetation, you can check with your local forestry agency for this, fire-prone trees and shrubs away from your home and far enough apart so they won't ignite one another. Make sure your street number is legible and clearly marked for emergency responders. Move any storage sheds, including lawnmowers, grills, gas cans, and tanks, away from your home. Before a threat, landscape with fire-resistant native plant species that retain moisture and resist ignition. Install metal screening that blocks embers from entering your buildings, including non-combustible attic crawl space vents and around low decks, non-combustible skirting around mobile homes, and if under a wildfire threat, only remove dead leaves or vegetation when local garbage collection services will have time to pick up the debris. Federal Alliance for Safe Homes, or FLASH, is a nonprofit organization and is a consumer advocacy group for strengthening homes and safeguarding families from natural and man-made disasters. For more information on wildfire prevention, visit www.flash.org or www.protectyourhome.org.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barrena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.